Testing.
Beautiful.
Testing, 1, 2.
Your vocals are coming in for sure.
And we're back at it again.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
What's up? Back again for our continued theme of spooky season.
It's still spooky season.
Yeah.
We're feeling extra spooky.
Extra spooky. How do we feel about that last full episode? Bigfoot Man. If you haven't listened to it,
hashtag
justice for Bigfoot. Go listen to that one. That one was kind of...
It was fun.
It was fun. It was infuriating, but it
was also
fun.
Yeah, you know, like...
A lot of mixed emotions.
That poor girl.
Yeah. There's going to be some of that in today's case. Not the same kind, but it's still a spooky season kind of theme, though. So it's not a traditional murder like we normally...
What murder?
The greatest guy around. Yeah. So if you're new to the podcast, welcome. Thanks for finding us in your feed, in your Spotify search.
We hope you tag along and listen for years to come.
Or at least this episode.
Yeah. We'll get through this.
Yeah. So this is Cookies and Crime. I'm Renee.
And I'm Mindy.
And we basically just talk about true crimes, gruesome stories.
And then we eat snacks.
Yeah. We have a snack time. That's probably the best part. Disclaimer, we're not professionals of any kind, so don't come at us if we get stuff wrong. Most of what we say are going to be theories and opinions and not fact. I will cite my sources, so like the facts I do spew out will be cited, but we both very often deviate and go into heated opinions.
Yeah.
It's just the way we are, so don't come at us. A warning today, I should have done this in the Bigfoot episode too, but just a warning for today's episode, it does involve addiction and crimes against children. So, unfortunately, I really don't like covering cases that are crimes against children. This one's unique, though. This one's not like... So, like, the JonBenet case, that was the horrible murder of a child. That one, like, destroyed me. This one's a bit unique, but still devastating. So, proceed with caution. I wish we had a 911 call to throw in here, because Mindy and I love those.
Love to listen to a 911
call. Love those.
Call.
Yeah, don't have that, but it should still be an interesting case. So I'm not going to tell you why it's a spooky season theme, though. I'm gonna lead up to that. So it's not going to be like the last one where I'm like, Bigfoot, let's go. This one, I want you to kind of like try to guess how weird this case gets, okay?
Yeah, let's go.
So 911 dispatch receives a call on the night of March 24th, 2014. It's the voice of a young man, quiet and calm, telling them, my dad tried to kill me. I shot him.
Oh.
So let's unpack this, okay?
Okay.
So we're going to like step back and look at the big picture and dive into this family first before we go into the events of that day in which the 911 call happened. The Samuel family. Eldon Samuel Jr. I'm just going to call him Jr. because this name is used a lot. Junior is the father. He was married to Tina Samuel for 14 years. They separated in May of 2012, which is 2 years before the story we're about to dive into starts. After the divorce, he moved himself and his kids, which are two boys, to Idaho so that he can rebuild himself after the separation. I don't think they were officially divorced. I think they were just separated. But but he relocated to Idaho. And he worked with like government aids and stuff to like help him get back on his feet. Like he was using like income-based housing, like stuff like he was trying.
Gotcha.
He was trying. Those officials that were working with him, and even after the fact, like after our story happens, they even like looking back, they're like, he was doing the best that he could with what he had. Which is important to keep in mind, because this case gets weird. So keep that in mind. He was doing the best he could with what he had. He had received 562 prescriptions over the course of 10 years from 36 different doctors.
Yikes.
Yes. And many of the pills he took were hydrocodone.
Ooh, that's Vicodin.
That's strong stuff.
Yeah.
Strong stuff. So Tina Samuel... After the separation, moved to California. She herself had received 789 prescriptions.
Yikes.
From 52 different doctors.
Wow.
Which this makes a lot of sense, because when I was looking at this case initially, I was like, the kids went with the dad to Idaho after the separation. Mm-hmm. She didn't take her kid, especially the reasons she cites for leaving him worried me. Mm-hmm. Like, why would you leave your kids in a situation like that? If you felt unsafe, why did you leave your babies there?
Right, right, right.
So I was really, this is bad, but I was really hardcore judging Tina. I was like, what kind of a mother are you? But this makes a lot more sense. Both of them were having serious addiction problems. And it was causing...
And those kinds of opioids, it's no joke.
It's no joke. No. They were both pretty messed up.
Yeah.
And it was adding more and more problems to their marriage. It just wasn't working. So they separated. He was attempting to get help. How successful that was is incredibly subjective, considering all that he had to work through. But that's where the parents are, okay? That's that situation. Eldon Samuel III. I'm going to call him Eldon. So Junior is dad, Eldon is son. Eldon is the oldest of these two boys. He's 14 at the time of this story, and he was quiet, reserved, very polite. He was a very, like, he sounds like a traditional good kid. Like, he's not going to talk back. He's not going to be chatty in class. He's very, like, keeps to himself. Jonathan Samuel, the youngest one, is 13 at the time of this story. He's autistic. He's funny. He's friendly. He's outgoing. Like, he was the one most people would interact with more often than not. The boys went to two different middle schools, which I thought was interesting, but I couldn't find a reason why.
Yeah, that is interesting.
So I'm just going to throw that out, that they lived in the same household, went to two different middle schools. And I don't know, like, maybe it was a district thing. Maybe one of them had a better program for special needs children. Mm-hmm. And so Jonathan with, I'm not sure. I even looked up the websites for those schools to see if one was a special needs school. And I couldn't deduce that fairly. So who knows? Just going to throw that fact out there, whether it's relevant or not. According to Tina, so back to the parents and their, like, troubled marriage, right? According to Tina, Junior was apparently moody and very controlling. And when he became addicted to prescription painkillers, after being prescribed them following a workplace accident, he got worse.
Ooh.
Which makes a lot of sense, because that would exacerbate any kind of character flaws you already have are probably going to get worse. According to Tina, they moved 20 times before the couple finally split. So, because they kept getting evicted because he wasn't paying rent.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, like, it was, like, it was getting bad. And, I lost my spot. Okay, yeah, they had been evicted nearly every place they lived. Also, according to Tina, Eldon was missing school a lot. His teachers said that it affected his development. But when he did show up in school, he was, like, again, quiet, polite, and he tried very hard. Like, he was a hardworking kid. He just wasn't there a lot because home was not great. Home was not great. Junior allegedly physically abused Eldon. I say allegedly. There are a lot of sources that confirm this, though. It's unclear if he abused Jonathan, but it doesn't sound like he did, because it sounds like Jonathan was, like, the favorite child. And Eldon got the most...
the brunt of it.
Yeah. So, Eldon's abuse was noted by his pediatrician because he was notably malnourished, living on only one meal a day, and he had horribly neglected teeth. So, whether this is, like, textbook physical abuse or it's, like, neglect, which is still abuse.
Probably
still
both.
Still abuse. Yeah. Either way, like, Junior... his weirdest trait... I say abuse in these kinds of cases seem pretty textbook, right? On top of that, Junior was a big believer in making sure his family was prepared for the worst case scenario.
Oh, boy.
So today, to say that Junior was a survivalist would be very generous. He had a crappy rundown trailer on his property in which he housed weapons and other supplies like canned food, water.
I do know the type.
That's not weird to me, because culturally, like, Latter-day Saints, we tend to do a lot of food storage. So that, like, when I read that, I was like, oh, that seems pretty textbook. And then I kept reading. And the reason that he did this wasn't even, like, if there's a natural disaster, I want my family taken care of. Like, that seems like a very normal
answer. Mean, I feel like, you know, like, some people have, like, extra supplies in their basement or whatever. Like, that's not too...
I think everyone should prepare for the worst-case scenario.
I mean, it does make sense.
Yeah. What he was actually
I kind of grew up in, like, a prepper house. Yes. So, like,
yeah. A lot of it makes sense to me because, and I mean, we saw this with COVID when certain disasters start to happen.
Sure. People go a little nuts.
Things shut down.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Are you going to starve? So, like, the prepper...
People buy all the toilet paper.
Exactly. You should have, like, plans in place. So that part didn't seem weird to me. What seemed weird is what he was preparing his family for. It wasn't natural disasters. It wasn't government and societal shutdowns. It was a zombie apocalypse, which he claims was inevitable.
Yeah, so, well, obviously.
Obviously. So he trained, a junior trained Eldon in the best ways to kill zombies. Because your
just
kids need to learn.
Headshot. It's a headshot. Come on.
Exactly. So he taught him how to use knives and guns. They would practice by cutting the heads off of rattlesnakes because that's the only way to kill zombies, taking off the head.
Boy, oh boy. What an interesting childhood.
What a family, right? So they watched a lot of zombie movies. They played a lot of Walking Clearly. Dead games. And Grand Theft Auto. That's important for later. The prosecution, when we get to the events of that day, the prosecution, interestingly, didn't like focusing on these violent games. I wanted you to know what was going on just for context. But in the actual trial of what happened, the prosecution did not want to dwell on the violent games. Because
gotcha.
Which was very, I thought that was very sweet of them. You'll see why I say that, because it's a very generous move to not be like, this happened because this family was exposed to violent video games. They were sure to point out evidence that this family also bought and rented, like, family-friendly movies. Like, they were, there was a wide variety of mm-hmm. stuff that they were, in terms of media, that they were
consuming.
Yeah. So while I think it's notable because of the zombie elements, I'm like, oh, that's very on brand. The prosecution was like, let's not talk about that. Moving on. So
yeah, anyway, that's really interesting.
Right? Yeah.
We'll because, go, you know, like that's been brought up in court before.
It's usually it's a clutch move. Mm-hmm. Like if a child or even like a grown man plays a lot of violent video mm-hmm. games, they're like, yeah, his brain is goo because mm-hmm. he, yeah, exposes himself to those kinds of violence. Anyway. Junior kept the kids isolated, and he kept the windows of the house blocked out so zombies couldn't see into the home.
Wow. Yeah. So, I mean, so there's a lot of delusional
yes.
thinking.
Yes, there is. And so the house was always cluttered with dirty clothes, dishes, trash, pill bottles, knives, machetes, guns, hatchets, throwing stars, brass knuckles, baseball bats. And a large duffel bag filled with ammunition sitting on a shelf.
Ready to go, so, just in case.
Right. Without diving into, like, political issues here, I have a lot of family members who own guns. So, like...
Yeah. We own a gun for safety. Yeah.
Just
and
to
like,
throw it out there, there are safe ways to do this.
Right.
This is not the safest way to store any of your
weapons. Oh, absolutely
weapons.
Not. No.
So while, like, the volume was really emphasized in a lot of commentaries on this case was, this is so many weapons. And I'm like, that's not the weird part. I have a relative who has, like, a literal shed full of guns. Just because.
Right.
But it's very safely locked.
Right.
Only certain people are allowed in. Like, his kids aren't allowed in there. Like,
right.
It's not...
The gun owners I know are, like, very
responsible. There's a responsible way to do this. This isn't it, but, you know, please educate your family and
yeah,
your kids.
Please don't just have machetes laying don't around. Like, be a better parent.
Don't have them accessible enough, because this stories like this will happen. So, the general family behavior was strange. So, not
yeah,
just
I mean,
this part.
These poor kids.
Yeah, and the neighbors. Can you imagine being a neighbor to this guy?
No.
The neighbors, after the fact, were talked to, and they were like, "So," and this is Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Am I pronouncing that right? That's the town they live in Idaho. I've heard it pronounced, but when you see it, it's an incredibly French name. When you see it written down,
oh, I'm sure.
I feel like I'm saying it wrong. But
it's
anyway,
Spanish.
This, we're not French babes, no. This neighborhood in Idaho, though, they commented on how distant Junior was. He never really interacted
with
anyone.
Well, my guy is prepping for the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, and even when he was outside, he was kind of like staring blankly.
Oh.
And they would say hi. Like, all these neighbors really tried so hard.
I could totally picture this dude.
This poor man is not well.
No.
Like, he's not
No. And was he on any kind of... Well, he was on pain pills.
Yes. He was...
Which can cause, you know... From overusage,
yes.
You can have psychotic.
Yeah. And he was still taking them. So while he was trying to kick the addiction, he was still working on that with groups and stuff like that. He was still struggling. And like when they dive into the evidence of this case, like he was still an active user.
Yeah.
So not all was well in Waffleville.
But like it almost sounds like there's something
else wrong.
Going on. Yeah. Yeah. Because
definitely.
That kind of delusional,
like
thinking,
schizophrenic kind of.
Yeah. Or maybe even like a bipolar, you know, like a manic type episode, because like, you know, he very much thinks like it's really going, like he's preparing his family.
Yes.
For this like eventual reality.
Manically. Like he is so aggressive about
it. Like he's training his children.
Like only that's his very oldest son. But
like
he
very much believes this.
He does. This is fact to him. This isn't,
and he's
like,
teaching his family like this is an eventual reality.
This is going to happen.
Yeah. So like his mind is not
exactly
with us.
His neighbors really tried to. They were like,
To reach out. Yeah,
they would pass multiple neighbors said essentially the same story, where they would try, when they would pass him on the street or they'd go out to their porch and see him in his yard, they would try to engage him, like, hi. I don't know if they called him Junior. I'm going to call him Junior. Hi, Junior. And he would just stare at them and not responding at all. Like, this one guy was like, he freaked my wife out because she was just like, hi. And then he like stared at her.
Yeah.
And didn't react. God. It's a little,
it's not necessarily the neighbor you'd want.
No. Props to them for trying, though.
The creepy dude.
I don't interact with neighbors. I avoid them. So,
well, we're introverted, scared people.
I don't
want
to engage and be perceived by neighbors, but it is like admirable for them. Considering like how messed up this poor family is and these poor kids, like it was kind of heartwarming to hear, even if they were saying that this dude was super weird, it was kind of nice to hear all of them like, we tried. When they moved in, we tried.
We did our best.
Yeah, we did our best. And
there was no
avail.
Helping this guy.
It's fine. Yeah. So we're going to take a quick break. And then when we get back, we're going to talk about the day of the crime on March 24th, 2014, and then how it was investigated. So we will be right back. Stay with us. As a true crime addict, I'm fully aware of the dangers anyone, particularly women, can face even walking down the street. Call me paranoid, but I carry a stun gun with me every chance I get. The problem is, security measures in places like airports prohibit the carrying of a lot of self-defense devices.
Anyone who listens to podcasts like ours knows that crime can happen anywhere. So what else is there? Birdie Personal Safety Alarms by She Birdie are designed to be versatile and safe to carry anywhere. These keychains are an easy, non-violent way to travel with peace of mind. When you feel unsafe, simply pull the top of the keychain to activate a loud siren and flashing strobe light. When you're safely in the clear, just reinsert the top of the keychain to turn the alarm off.
A loyal fan messaged us about this product and we immediately fell in love. We adore our Cookies and Crime listeners, so please stay aware and invest in your personal safety so you don't end up featured as a case on this podcast. Follow the link in our show notes and use code Cookies and Crime to get 15% off each order. Okay, guys, we're back. And now we're going to go into March 24th, 2014. At this time, the Samuels were living in an emergency housing unit owned by St. Vincent de Paul, which is basically low-income housing, as I kind of mentioned before. They've been living there for 3 months, and they were actually getting ready to move into more permanent housing. So there was like a very brief, it was supposed to be a very transitive kind of state for them. According to Eldon, the oldest son, remember, his father had taken a lot of meds that day, and he was outside talking a little bit about zombies, probably standard. He took his .45 caliber pistol outside with him, and he fired it into the air.
Why?
Yeah, just get cut. Yeah, just cut.
Because he was feeling himself.
He came.
Wanted to pull a Yosemite Sam.
He just did it. Yeah. So when he came back inside the house, he told Eldon that zombies were descending upon them.
Oh, no. He's in full, like.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's
and
in
he
full
said,
psychotic
you
episode.
You need to help me fight them. And Eldon was like, you're crazy. And Junior, so they got in an argument, and allegedly Junior threatened to kick Eldon out of the house with no clothes if he didn't help him fight the zombies that were outside. Like, he was in full panic mode. He was like, no, you're helping me fight these zombies, or I'm kicking you out of this house and not letting you have your clothes. And Eldon claims that his father shoved him in the chest twice, prompting Eldon to somehow grab a gun and shoot him. So Junior was shot in the stomach with the pistol. He then attempted to crawl to Jonathan's room Eldon claims that he believed his dad would come after him again if he got back up. So he shot him in the head three times.
Ooh.
This is a 14-year-old kid.
Oh, my goodness.
14-year-old kid just shoots his dad at this point four times. Eldon then... That... If that wasn't bad enough, Eldon then goes into his brother's room. Jonathan had heard the gunshots, and he was hiding under his bed. Remember, he's autistic, so he's probably incredibly sensitive to even the arguing. He could have been hiding under there because they were arguing, and that was too overstimulating for him. He was hiding under the bed, and Eldon comes into his room and attacks his brother with a shotgun, a knife, and a machete.
Wow.
So he shot his dad four times, standard, left him on the ground to bleed out and die. And then he goes in and essentially, like, slaughters his baby brother. And then Eldon calmly goes outside and calls 911 on himself.
Oh, my goodness. This is not what I thought was going to happen.
This didn't go in the direction.
No.
So Jonathan was found. The little brother was found bloody and sprawled over his dad's legs. And it's unclear. I couldn't find any source that could, like, clarify this for me. It's unclear if Junior made it to Jonathan's room before he finally died, or if Jonathan had crawled out to his dad mid-attack or something. Not exactly sure how the logistics of that happened, but somehow Jonathan made it to the bed, from under the bed to his dad in the hall. Or maybe Eldon moved the bodies. I don't know. This was not clarified to me. But yeah, but both Junior and Jonathan were both found super, super dead. At this time, Eldon was taken in for an investigation. And he was, like, arrested immediately. This was a very short investigation because Eldon, again, he called 911 on himself. He's like, I did this.
14.
I for sure did this.
My God.
They arrest him. They put him in the back of the car. And he's, like, not acting. He seemed detached because he wasn't acting like a child who had just killed his dad and slaughtered his brother. He was, like, mildly complaining that the handcuffs were a little uncomfortable while he was sitting there while they were investigating the scene. And it was strange. He seemed like so... If I had seen that footage out of context, I would have been like, this was a misunderstanding. I don't think this kid committed a crime. He's not acting at all like someone who just went through something traumatic. But he was. And they took him in to be interrogated. And it's really kind of... The footage is really kind of heartbreaking because he's interacting with one of the detectives that's in the room. There's two of them interrogating him. One of him has had very clearly interacted with this family multiple times, which breaks my heart because he knew Eldon well.
Mm.
He had been to that house many times.
Yeah.
He was very familiar with the family, which is not a good sign when the police have to be that familiar with your family. It helped Eldon kind of open up about what happened, but it didn't make me feel good at all. Because I was like, oh no, poor baby. But as they talked to him, he eventually started to get a little more comfortable. Again, he wasn't acting like someone who just did this horrible thing. But he did start talking about, like, the root causes of what could have triggered that. It wasn't just, I got in a fight with my dad, I wanted to shoot him in the head because he was my abuser. It goes so much farther than that. At the time, Eldon felt like Jonathan was the root cause of his father's behavior and the need for his medication because he was autistic. He was high maintenance. He told the officers this.
Yeah.
It's interesting. This is a really, really common way for siblings to feel, though, because Eldon was like, his issues are what caused all of the problems. It's why mom and dad got divorced. Mm-hmm. It's why both of them are on painkillers because he's too much and he's getting all the attention. It wasn't even just my parents probably hated him and like that's why they were exhausted all the time. It was also like they don't love me because they love him so much.
Mm-hmm.
It was very like there was clearly an imbalance in this family. When I, just a side track a little bit, when I was diagnosed, I wasn't a kid like Jonathan. I was a young adult. But I was young enough still to go to a children's hospital. And I found out that it's standard practice. And I don't know if this is in every state or just Ohio. It's standard practice for a hospital psychologist to talk to the diagnosed child and the family about, like, okay, heads up, the siblings are going to start acting out because all of this attention is going to this one child. Like, I was straight up warned, your sisters might hate you for a little bit. They didn't. I mean, maybe there are underlying issues there, but, like, it didn't, because I wasn't an actual child, but I can only imagine, like, when your younger sibling, like Jonathan, is diagnosed with autism and is told that he needs X, Y, and Z to be properly cared for, and you're Eldon over here already being abused, now you're hearing, oh, I have even less reason to be noticed. Like, that's...
Yeah, I mean, it's sad because, like, what you... he probably is lashing out because of so many different factors. And unfortunately, it ended in the deaths of two people.
Yeah. Really horrific deaths of two people. It wasn't even... It was not...
It's really unfortunate.
Yeah. He truly believed... and this was interesting to watch in the interrogation, too. Because, you know, like, remember, his dad's already dead. But he's saying... he says to the cops at some point, like, if Jonathan had been dead, I think my dad and I would be a really happy family. Well, you poor baby, it's too late for that, because you didn't just kill Jonathan. You killed your dad, too.
Right. And, you know, like, he, this poor kid has grown up with a parent with delusional thinking. He's developed his own delusional thinking. And, you know, who knows, like, what kind of mental illness was at play, because a lot of times it's genetic. So it's really, that's sad.
He stuck to the story that killing his dad was self-defense. I don't think he defended his actions in killing Jonathan, because he just really was like, he was the cause of the problem. So he pretty much owned up to, I did that because he was the cause of our problems. But I killed my dad out of self-defense. Like, that's what he stuck to. His attorney claimed that he, who was 16 at the time of his trial, by the way, his trial didn't happen until 2 years later. He should have the right to plead not guilty by reason of insanity, which I agree with. But for some reason, Idaho bans that. I don't know why, but you can't plead not guilty by reason of insanity, which seems kind of silly. So Eldon was sentenced to 10 years for killing his father and 20 years for killing his brother. So he's essentially, it's a life sentence.
I hope that he gets some kind of treatment.
I do too.
You know, it's really, it's, you hate to hear a story like that. That's awful.
I watched footage of the trial, some of the footage of the trial, not all. I didn't go through the entire trial, but I, saw enough footage to see he's a completely different person now at six. Well, when his trial took place at age 16, he was already a different person. Like, he was not, he didn't look nearly as deranged. He looked a little well rested, way better fed. So I'm hoping for his sake that his time in prison does mean that he's getting treatment, and also that he's, like, being fed.
Yeah, I mean, like, at least exercise. Basic needs are being cared for.
Because that wasn't happening, apparently.
Well, and that could push anybody to an edge. So, you know, we don't know, like, what all this kid had been through before, you know, leading up to that incident.
Yeah, we know what was reported. It wasn't good. What Tina's claiming.
Right.
She, and again, I'm going to sound horrible, but she was involved in the trial, too, because she testified a lot about Junior. And she basically pleaded, like, please don't send him to prison. He's all I have left. In my head, I was like, really? You could have stopped that. You could have gotten yourself clean and saved your kids from that situation.
Right.
But you didn't. Now, I realize I'm being unfair, because I don't know what she went through when they got separated. She may have been in a long-term rehab, for all I know, for 2 years. Is that, like, a thing? 2 year rehab? That seems like an extended period of time.
Yeah, I mean, you probably have to have money.
I'm giving her way too much of benefit of the doubt there. But, like, but really, I realize I'm being unfair, but that was my gut reaction when I read her, like, little blip of, like, he's all I have left. And I'm like, really? Okay. You left him there, though. So I feel like she's a little culpable, but.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Anyway, that's the case of Eldon Samuel.
Boy, oh boy. That's a crazy case.
Who was trained to kill zombies and ended up killing his brother and dad. Yep. Sad.
Yeah, that's a rough one.
It's sad. It's traumatizing and also spooky. The zombie element was strange. Like, that's what caught my attention.
Yeah. I've never heard of this case.
Yeah. Yeah. His mom, like, that was her big push point, was my husband trained them to kill zombies.
God, that's awful.
Like, and you left them to be trained by to kill zombies.
Poor kids.
I mean, maybe those skills are transferable in real life, like hypervigilance or something.
Yeah, but I mean, that's not healthy.
It's not at all healthy. Anyway. No, and they weren't being fed and they weren't going to school. So, like,
yeah,
they weren't going to school often because their teachers and the schools had a lot to do with the trial, too. Like, they submitted testimonies and stuff like that. But, yeah, crazy, right?
Yeah.
Crazy. So sad. Anyway, let's end this on a sweet note. What is our treat today?
We have a special treat from a listener.
Yes!
Who gave us the cutest sugar cookies.
Yes, gluten-free.
Gluten-free. These are from Eileen.
Thank you, Eileen. We love you, Eileen.
We love you, Eileen. Oh my God, look.
They're so cute and they're individually packaged.
She individually packaged these. They're so cute. Oh my God. Look at them. They're beautiful.
I love it. It's like little confetti packages.
I know.
I love it. So she doesn't have her own bakery in terms of like selling baked goods, but she does have an Instagram account she shares with a couple of friends there. It's like their hobby account where they post a lot of their baked goods. So if you like looking at good food on Instagram, follow Cut the Bull.
Yeah.
That's what it's called. Cut the Bull
and
Bakery.
It's adorable, and I'm so excited
to
try these.
I think they should start selling stuff because they're super good. Okay, let's do this.
All right, we're digging in. Having trouble.
We're getting there. Oh, they're in little packs of two.
Uh-huh.
Perfect. One for you and one for me.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do this.
Ready?
And go.
Oh my gosh. It's so good.
Five.
Oh, that's a fiver.
Five skulls.
Beautiful.
I love a good sugar cookie.
Oh my gosh, they're delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Well done,
you
Eileen.
You got five skulls, Eileen.
Well done.
You got it. Man, yeah, that was good.
I haven't had a homemade cookie in a minute.
Right? Something to be said for that. I think they should sell these for sure so everyone can partake. In the meantime, though, everyone should follow that account.
Yeah.
And look at all the yummy stuff that they post.
For sure.
All right. Well, I guess that's it for today. Stay tuned for our next spooky season episode. Who knows?
And remember,
we
still have spooky season merch.
Yes. If you want to support us beyond like listening, sharing, liking, reviewing, please, please, please check out our shop. The link's going to be in the bio and in the show notes. Also in our Instagram bio, though. But and buy some merch. Get some cool shirts. We just added a whole bunch for spooky season.
They're so cute.
And we have a promotion going on until the end of October where you get free shipping if you use the code spooky season. So
heck yeah.
That's on any order. You can order so many. You can order
save you like
every
$8.
Day. Yeah, every time. That adds up. That adds up for sure. So, all right. Well, like, subscribe,
follow, comment,
do the stuff,
tell us stuff,
send us your favorite spooky story, whether it's true crime or not. Maybe we'll talk about it.
Probably will.
I think that's a yes. All right, see you guys next time.
Okay, bye.